Every time we eat a meal, we make a choice with Impact Real. The only way our earth will heal is changing what we grow.
Was that Seth Goldman singing? Yep, it was. And if you listen in to the whole episode, you'll be treated with a full Earth Month sea shanty at the end, featuring Seth, co-founder Spike, and Javier Stark. You're joining the Startup CPG Podcast Earth Month episode. I'm your host, Jesse Freitag.
When you operate in a consumer economy and you're committed to sustainability, you're automatically in a contradiction, right? The definition of consume is to devour and destroy. And the definition of sustain is to uphold life. And so the best thing to do is to recognize it, be honest about it, do your best to reconcile those contradictions.
Today is part three of our podcast series with Seth Goldman, Startup CPG's entrepreneur in residence, who is joining us once a month to talk hot topics in CPG. This episode is all about sustainability, planet-based commitments, and Earth Month. You may know Seth as the co-founder of Honest Tea and author of Mission in a Bottle, and Seth is now the co-founder and CEO of Eat the Change, co-founder of Plant Burger, and chair of the board for Beyond Meat. Listen in as Seth covers how to develop planet-based commitments as a brand, the challenges of recyclable and compostable packaging, how to balance marketing and education about sustainability with the food product, Eat the Change's Earth Month efforts, and more. Hi, Seth. Welcome back to the show today.
Thanks, Jesse. Great to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you here. And so glad that we get to talk with you during Earth Month. And excited to tap into your knowledge about sustainability and Eat the Change's planet-based commitments. And so I'm wondering if you could start us out, though, by just telling us a little bit about climate change and the food system and your perspective on the type of change that we can create as food brands and consumers.
Sure. And you know, for Eat the Change, Earth Month is like our Super Bowl. It's the month we feel it's our best chance to, you know, shout our message out. And the message we really, you know, are all focused on conveying is that the choices we make in our diet are the single biggest daily impact we have on the planet. And so, of course, it's great when you can recycle or bike to work or take mass transit. But what you choose to eat every day has bigger impact on the planet, on the climate, than any other daily choice you make. So we seek to reinforce that in every way. And in fact, for Earth Month, we have launched the Incredible Planet Challenge, which is 21 days, the first 21 days of the month. Every day we offer a different step. And they're all small steps, but they're all, you know, cumulatively big steps about helping people make conscious choices about what they eat and how they eat it. And so, you know, the first day is just switching from animal-based dairy to plant-based dairy. And that's a really simple step, whether it's in your coffee or in your tea or your cereal, and all along the way. And so for the way we see it, you hear all the messages warning, oh, we only have these many years left. We don't have any years left to take action. It needs to happen. It needed to happen 10 and 20 years ago. But it certainly needs to happen now.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I love the challenge. That's awesome. And where can we learn more about that?
Yeah.
If people want to participate.
Sure.
Yeah.
Eatthechange.com lists all the different days, all the different steps. And on our social media, we'll be highlighting it all month as well. But of course, it's wonderful to join us in the challenge. But if you're hearing this in the middle of the month, it's fine to go and start from scratch as well, just because it's you may not have missed the first day. All of the steps are obviously steps that can be taken any day. And certainly we think about Earth Month as every month should be Earth Month. Every day should be, you know, a day when we make choices that are consistent with our concerns about the Earth.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And can you tell us more about Eat the Change's planet-based commitments that you have? I've seen them outlined on your website. I love how detailed they are. And I'd love if you could talk a little bit about those.
Sure. When we were creating the brand, we really spent a lot of time, and this is one of the luxuries of you know, being in a pandemic. Of course, I say that a little ironically, it's a luxury, but when you're not actively doing commerce, it gives you the chance to think about what kind of brand would you want to create. And so we focused on, I actually looked closely at drawdown.org, which is a resource. It's a publicly available resource that lists and prioritizes and ranks the top solutions to address global warming. And so there are 80 solutions listed, but of the top 20, almost half of them are all about food. And so then we said, well, let's make sure we're addressing those. And so some of the highest ranking steps are shifting or focusing diet on plant and fungi-based foods. So avoiding animal-based foods. And that's just a simple math. You know, I know from my time at Beyond Meat, we did a life cycle analysis there. And we found that a Beyond Burger uses 99% less water, 93% less land, and creates 90% fewer greenhouse gas emissions. So the first important step is to make sure everything is plant or fungi-based. The next step is to think about food waste. And so let's make sure we are not using any food waste in any of the, creating any food waste in any of the products we use. So for example, when we use make a mushroom jerky, we'll use the stem as well. You know, most times when you buy, for example, a portobello mushroom in a grocery store, you're only getting the cap. You're not getting the full mushroom. But let's also make sure no mushrooms are discarded. So let's use the bruised mushroom or the oversized or undersized mushroom. That's the beauty about mushroom jerky. There's no one can tell because after it's gone through a marinating and smoking process, no one can tell whether it was bruised or undersized or oversized. And then let's also, because water waste is so important, let's focus on crops that are water efficient. And so, for example, it's not a coincidence that our main product offerings right now are mushroom jerky and carrot-based snacks. And the reason is they're super water efficient. So it takes 257 gallons of water to grow a pound of soybeans. And it takes 1,800 gallons of water to grow a pound of beef. But it only takes 39 gallons of water to grow a pound of mushrooms and 23 gallons of water to grow a pound of carrots. So for us, focusing on those water-efficient crops is another key step. And then another thing that probably won't surprise you is we always commit to organic. And for us, organic is important because it means fewer chemical pesticides, fertilizers going into the ecosystem. And those compounds are, especially the herbicides and pesticides and insecticides, they're designed to kill living organisms. That's that end word psi, that suffix is, represents killing. And so if we can avoid ingesting or putting into our environment compounds designed to kill living organisms, we know that's better for us. Then the fourth commitment is supporting biodiversity. And at Eat the Change, we bring that to life by focusing on crops that aren't as commonly or widely used. It turns out there are six crops that represent 57% of all agricultural production, and we avoid including any of those. So no soy, corn, wheat, potatoes, rice, or sugarcane are used in our recipes. And then the fifth planet-based commitment is access for all. We want to, in the way we run the business and in the nonprofits we support, we want to help democratize planet-friendly foods to make sure they're not just available to either people in wealthy areas or people with sort of, extra levels of education. We want to make them available wherever we can.
Yeah, awesome. Those are great. And I love how specific they are. And I noticed that, you're not saying, oh, we're going to be natural or we're going to be eco-friendly. You're not listing just those words as bullet points. And I'm wondering if that that seems very intentional.
That's a really good point. And thanks for pointing it out we want to make sure we're not asking someone to take our word for it. So we don't just say, oh, it's eco-friendly or it's all natural. We rely on the organic seal, which is a third-party verified standard, that is federally enforced. And with respect to biodiversity, we aren't just saying we're going to go donate to some, nonprofit rainforest. Although, of course, that's wonderful too. But we're supporting biodiversity on our label. You can look at the label and understand those ingredients are not included. And so those are steps. We wanted to make sure every step could be clearly understood and clearly enforced with no gray lines or, the potential for us to be greenwashing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's super important because I've seen that consumers will see the word natural and gravitate toward it just because you're like, oh, I want to make better choices. But then you don't necessarily know what that's being backed up by. So that third-party validation and understanding the specifics is super important.
Absolutely.
And you also have you know, you have packaging, I believe, that's recyclable, and finding packaging that is sustainable, compostable, it's really challenging. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what you've tried to do with packaging, what you hope to do with packaging in the future.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest, that's an area where we do not excel. We initially did set up a fifth commitment as trying to make sure our packaging was leading edge sustainable. And our mushroom jerky pouches right now are recyclable in the same stream that you can reuse shopping bags. But what we found is that consumers really are not recycling our pouches, and that element of our commitment, we did not formalize that. We replaced that part of the commitments with access for all, because we felt that was one we could carry through on, especially as we launch our kids product. Those pouches are not recyclable. And so, of course, we'd love to be able to use compostable packaging, but we have yet to find a compostable package that is food safe and has the same shelf life as our other products. And so we encourage folks to develop those. We'd love to use them when they're available. But, you know, I think I want to make sure we're being honest here. We're not over promising what we can deliver on. And though it's aspirational, we'd certainly love to do it. We decided to take it out of our commitments because we aren't able to deliver on that as well as we are on the others.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the packaging challenge, I feel that in my heart, because at Live Bar, they had a compostable wrapper that worked just specifically for a certain pH, and it worked on specific equipment. But then trying to scale it when you get a little bit bigger, it was like, oh, okay, well, you can't use the same material, you can't use the same this. And then the minimum order quantities were like, great, well, do you want a container of that? And I'm like, well, no, we're just a little brand. And so it's super hard for small brands to affect change on the packaging side, I think, because it's just, there's so much research that needs to be done. And to be able to foot the bill of that, you know, I'm hoping that we could get some bigger companies to help introduce some change. And then, you know, the smaller guys can start using some of these innovations, because there's so much potential, but it's so hard as a little brand, and the options out there right now just really aren't great. Or they say things like, oh, it's compostable. And you're like, wait, but in how long? And
or commercial composting facilities, you know, something that you don't have access to. So no, you're absolutely right. And then of course, you know, the worst outcome is your packaging fails and a consumer gets sick. That would obviously not be a good outcome. Or something expires, you know, and if food waste is an imperative, then you've got to make sure the food product, you know, is usable. And so these are real challenges, especially on the startup side. But I just have come to believe that the large companies are the ones that are going to have to take the mantle of developing these. And certainly small companies, once it's proven and like you say, scalable, not doesn't have to be bought at huge quantities, then the small companies will be the ones willing to lean into it. But we can't be the ones taking that first risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm wondering, what kind of mistakes do you see brands make in regards to being sustainable? We've talked a little bit about kind of avoiding generic terms, but what other mistakes do you see people make?
Well, you know, we all have the goal of reducing our packaging, but then it's easy to lean too much into that and then say, well, you know, so we're only going to sell in bulk, but that's not how the consumer operates. And so there's that balance. You've got to meet the consumer where the consumer is. And as an example, I'll share what we've done with our carrot chews. So we're launching these in a five pack with five pouches. And so we would use less packaging if we put those five servings all into one big bag. But we have to recognize the landscape, right? The landscape right now is all these fruit chews out there, which aren't fruit at all, but are, you know, call themselves fruit chews. And so parents are, they are opting for convenience. And we have to recognize we're asking parents to make a change in behavior by shifting from those fruit chews, which their kids know and love and are easy to drop in a lunchbox. And we can only ask for so much change of behavior. And so our point of view is, well, let's change the behavior. Let's replace those quote unquote fruit chews with real carrots. That's one step of action we can take. And you know, I think we have a shot at replacing. If we ask them to both replace the fruit chews with carrots and then buy it in a bulk bag and then make it into small individual servings, that's just a step further than where they're comfortable. And a lot of times when a parent's taking this kind of risk, you know, it sounds silly to call it risk because, of course, it's better for the child and the environment. But when we're asking them to change their behavior, they're often just looking for an excuse to say, oh, it's too hard to do, or, oh, I don't have the time, or I can't do that. So we've got to meet them on the plane where they are currently behaving, and then we can tweak their behavior from there. But so I think letting the perfect be the enemy of the good is a mistake that a lot of mission-driven entrepreneurs are often make. And it's a tricky balance, but I want to make sure people are aware of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could even see, you know, you sell the product in bulk or something, and then the busy parent is then going home and using what they have and just putting them in individual Ziplocs or whatever. So, it makes a lot of sense. It's incremental change that will work with the larger consumer population.
For sure. You know, we had at Beyond Meat, some people said, well, could you just make your own form of protein? Why model it after a burger? Why not make your own form of protein? And that's a neat idea, but we've got to, once again, let's meet the consumer with their current behavior, which is burgers are the single biggest, you know, meat consuming occasion there is, especially with respect to restaurants. So we got to make a burger. Like, we can, you know, someday maybe we'll explore some other protein, but if you start asking the consumer to jump through too many hoops, they're going to just, you know, resort to their behavior they're accustomed to.
Right. And on that note, I'm wondering your thoughts about marketing or educating consumers about the sustainable aspects of a product. Like in the past, we've talked about, you know, how you lead with taste, or, you know, that there's the planet base behind Eat the Change. So, you know, where do you balance educating consumer and marketing that with the product, with the taste and everything else?
Well, Earth Month is a great time to really do that deep education. And so that's obviously why we're putting so much resources into our Incredible Planet Challenge. But I want to make sure on our website, we have as much information available around the environmental aspects as we can. But on the package, which is we're very limited room, that's where we don't want to overdo it. Because as soon as you start talking about organic or even, environmentally responsible, consumers start hearing in their heads, they start hearing doesn't taste good, costs more money. And I'll admit, this is the contrast my co-founder Barry loved to talk about. If you're in the toilet paper aisle and you're looking at environmentally friendly toilet paper, you just in your mind think it's more like sandpaper. And so, you don't want to overemphasize those elements, like going back without, because that's not the job that a shopper is hiring us for. They're not saying, I want to go save the earth. Let me go buy, organic mushroom jerky. They may say, I'm hungry and I want something delicious. Oh, here's some mushroom jerky. Oh, and it's organic. Okay. Oh, and it's a light water footprint. Okay. But we just can't lead with all that as a way to get the consumer the first time. And, you know, if someone wants to dig deep, I want to make sure we have those resources available. But we just can't afford to lead with that all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also, if you do talk about it, I feel like, you know, having the authenticity to back it up is so key. I got a sample of a product the other day that said it was natural and eco-friendly, like we talked about. And there was like four different layers of packaging that I had to get through to get to the food, to the plastic that was then in a metal container. And I was like, what? Like, I felt like I was, you know, unpacking, I was solving some sort of puzzle to get to the product. And I was like, you know, you put these claims on there, but just my initial experience doesn't match up with this. And so you're marketing something that really isn't authentic.
Yeah, it's a challenge for sure. And you know, the good news is most consumers now have enough awareness, certainly of the concerns, and they're educating themselves more and more. So, you know, we've always known organic is a great shorthand to let people know we've taken care with respect to how we grow and cultivate this product. And of course, fair trade, you know, was a really useful way to express our concern and responsibility with respect to the workers. And, you know, some of these new commitments, those aren't things people necessarily know about, certainly around biodiversity or plant or fungi based. So we've got to educate as much as we can. But, you know, part of what Eat the Change is about is educating the consumer. One really fun example, and we have to educate buyers as well. So we launched the Carrot Chews. We presented them to one buyer, and that buyer said, well, you know, the fruit chews I sell are all the same size, and they're all, you know, why don't you take your carrots and stamp out little, you know, make them into little dinosaurs? I said, the problem is that's going to create waste. That means that it's parts of the carrot we wouldn't be using. So let's use the whole carrot, and let's try to educate both parents and children about this is what a natural product looks like, and this is what it, you know, this is how it behaves. So, you know, we've got to take on some of that education ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of organic, I'm wondering, you know, a lot of us see the organic label a lot, but until you have a brand and you go through the organic certification process, and I've been through it, it's a lot in a good way. And I'm wondering if you can kind of describe the, you know, getting certified organic, the process and what it involves for us.
Yeah, no, it's a very thorough process. And it really means that there's a paper trail from the soil to through the production facility. It means that, you know, someone's inspecting where your product is grown. So if it's, you know, carrots, they're looking at soil samples. They're looking at obviously what is put in the field. And then they're looking at how they're processed. They'll want to make sure there's no artificial ingredients involved, or even in the cleaning of the line. There's certain products allowed to clean the equipment, but others that are not allowed. And then obviously in the recipe as well, they need to make sure whether it's other flavorings or the way the product is treated, that, you know, there's no irradiation, for example. So really a levels of paperwork that's involved. And so we work with a local certifier called Pennsylvania Certified Organic. We've worked with them ever since, going back to my Honest Tea days, ever since 1998. And then they are certified or approved by the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And so it's a very thorough process, and it certainly should give consumers a great deal of confidence about how these products are grown, all the way through the way they're processed.
Yeah, absolutely. After sitting through my first organic audit, Live Bar used Oregon Tilth as a certifier. I was like, wow, when I see that logo, I thought, you know, I would think about myself sitting at the table going through all the documents and tracking everything. And I was like, wow, there's a level here of tracing that just is really cool. And the transparency is really amazing.
Yeah. And it's a really good point also, because, you know, there are other seals out there. There's the non-GMO seal and other things, but organic really encompasses all of them. So organic does also stipulate that the product is non-GMO. And there's just a lot behind that seal. And it's something that, you know, we've always been committed to and invested to in all the different Honest Tea and Eat the Change. And what's nice about it is it's a great example where the government has created an incentive without a mandate. So no one is required to grow something organically. But if you do want to take that step, you can use that seal and, you know, sort of aspire. So it's a great example of a carrot rather than a stick to move toward more sustainable agriculture.
Yeah. And I see this question a lot from founders that have maybe they've started out and they're not necessarily organic, but, you know, maybe they're being careful with their sourcing and they're like, at what point do I need to get certified organic, or, you know, I can't quite afford it? Or what tips do you have for brands that are like, I want to, you know, it's a goal of mine to have that seal. How do I get there? When do I get there?
So I have some strong opinions on it. So I think that any emerging food entrepreneur should be really working hard toward organic, because part of what we're doing as entrepreneurs is offering something that's not in the marketplace. And so, you know, the big companies usually will have a large supply chain for conventional. And when we can make something special and different, we're able to charge a premium for it. So that's one aspect from a competitive point of view. That said, when we started Honest Tea, it wasn't all organic. We only were able to use organic where we had enough of the supply chain in place to make it economically viable. So we started with organic sugar, and then we found some organic green tea, and then we found some organic black tea. And then we just continued to move along. And then for us, the next step was making sure we had enough organic sugar. And so not just organic sugar, but organic fair trade sugar. And we didn't commit to organic fair trade sugar until we were confident we were not buying most of the market. So initially, there just wasn't enough of a market for organic fair trade sugar that basically we would be buying the only supply. And we realized, wow, if that supplier goes out of business, we're going to have to switch, which you can't do as a company. Once you're up and running, you can't just sort of, you know, you have product on the market, you can't switch labels that quickly. So, you know, you want to work with suppliers to develop their supply chain. And we started doing that with tea. We had suppliers, once we committed to our first organic tea, which is in 1999, we let everybody know this was the path we were on. And that if you wanted to be our supplier in the future, you were going to have to be organic. And that continued through our time with Coca-Cola. And we said, now we're organic and we're fair trade. And so if you want to be able to be considered by us, that's what you'll have to do in terms of your certifications. And so it's not too early to say this, to set your intention, but you got to make sure you're not doing it in a way that, you know, exposes you to supply chain risk, which of course there's so much of today. You certainly can't run out. And then you also don't want it to be so narrow, the supply chain so thin that, you know, a climate shock or a disease shock would throw off your cost of goods to the point where you'd lose money. So there's definitely some thought needed behind it. But from my point of view, in food, you really want to go there. And the one exception, I'll give the example of Beyond Meat, because that is not yet organic, but because it's such a nascent supply chain. You know, for many years with Beyond Meat, we were just scrambling to find enough ingredients. And so we certainly weren't in a place where we said, okay, well, you know, we're going to go to organic. And so there's a long-term aspiration to see Beyond Meat be able to offer organic products, but it can't be a priority when we're still scrambling to make this product enough of it and to make it price competitive with conventional meat.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I'm also wondering, I had seen mentioned on your website the how to recycle third party company. And I hadn't heard of that. And I was wondering if you could describe that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a great resource for people that you can go to the website and you'll be able to learn what can be recycled. And of course, one of the huge challenges with our national recycling system is that there is no national recycling system. It's all these different regions and even different municipalities. And so so you may have a package that certain parts are recyclable in one area and not others. And so that how to recycle bug will help you know what you use in that product that is recyclable. And we use that at Honest Tea as well. But you know, that does highlight a real systemic challenge that needs to happen. So when we launched Honest Tea in Germany, it was amazing. We were able to find a bottle that could be recycled and reused nationally. And that's just because there was a national system. But of course, in the United States, where literally one county might recycle glass and one county might not, you just are always, there's a lot of uncertainty, and that is such a barrier to changing behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. It's when I used to work at Adidas and we would do events around the country, Adidas has a big sustainability push. And so if, you know, any food waste from a big event or whatever, it was like, all right, we got to figure out what can be recycled locally. And in a lot of places, it was so challenging. They're like, we don't recycle these things. If, you know, we can separate them for you, but we'll just take them to the dump afterwards. And we're like, well, okay, no, let's not do that. And so then figuring out, you know, okay, how are we going to do this? But it's super challenging when there's not the infrastructure everywhere to support it.
Well, and it creates ethical issues even for the entrepreneur. So, you know, we knew at Honest Tea that Alaska does not recycle glass bottles. And so, you know, is it ethical to sell glass to Alaska? You basically know it's going to landfill. But then you say, well, is it ethical to sell any package if only 30% of people are recycling? So, you know, it's just there's continuous challenges out here. And I guess what it highlights, and this is something I've said before, is that when you operate in a consumer economy, you always, and you're committed to sustainability, you're automatically in a contradiction, right? The definition of consume is to devour and destroy, and the definition of sustain is to uphold life. And so you automatically are in that contradiction. And I think the best thing to do is to recognize it, be honest about it, do your best to reconcile those contradictions. But I don't think you'll ever be able to fully reconcile them.
Right. And being in the fight and putting things out there and trying to be different and to be better in incremental ways, that's how we're going to make change. If we're like, well, we can't find a perfect solution, so let's not do anything, that's not a good solution. So be, you know, playing in the gray area and trying to make it work with the best intentions for the planet and for everyone, I think that's where we have to keep playing in the in the rough spot.
That's right. I agree.
Do you have any other stories maybe from, you know, Honest Tea or any, you know, any other time kind of through your career of, you know, challenges with sustainability, especially as a company grows?
Well, to me, one of the themes certainly through the Honest Tea journey is to really keep an eye on your destination and recognize that it'll take time. And so fair trade for us was a really interesting lesson. The reason I'm talking about fair trade in the context of sustainability, because yes, fair trade is about social responsibility. It's about the wages we pay, but it also has a really significant environmental impact as well. And let me explain what I mean. So within Project Drawdown, one of the top five steps they suggest for addressing global warming is educating women and girls. And so you'd say, well, wait a minute, why is that an environmental initiative? Well, it turns out that when you educate women and girls, they have not just economic independence, but they marry later in life and they have fewer children. And so when we think about reducing the environmental footprint of humans, having fewer footprints, meaning fewer people, is actually a really important step. And so we wanted to, we brought out the world's first fair trade certified bottled tea in 2003. And we were so excited about it. We were like, well, could we make everything fair trade? And we looked at the supply chain and we just couldn't get there. We would either have to raise our price or change our ingredients or lower our margins, which we weren't willing to do. And so we set on that path, and it took 8 years through 2011 to get everything to be fair trade certified in terms of the tea. And that, you know, but today, as we look at it, so that was 2003, that meant for 5 years, 2011. So now basically 11 years. Honest Tea has been completely fair trade certified. So it was worth the time and the effort and the patience to get it right. And so sometimes, you know, you're impatient, you want change to happen quickly and for all the right reasons, but you've got to understand if you're in it for the long game, it's okay to do it deliberately and with a little more patience.
Yeah. And does the fair trade certification process, is that similar to the organic process where you're kind of looking at the whole supply chain and the social aspects and making sure everything's transparent and then being audited, or how does that work?
Yeah. So there are audits for fair trade. Those happen at the garden level. So, or the farm level. So, you know, at a tea garden, they'll look at the wages, the workers are paid. They'll look at the working conditions, obviously make sure there's no child or prison labor. And then there's a portion of the sales that go back to a council of workers. And it's really one that is exciting because the council is a representative of the working population. So in tea gardens, especially in India and Sri Lanka, most of the pluckers are women. And so fair trade empowers these women. It gives them economic means that they would not normally have, an economic governance over their community. They have a say in how the money is spent. So often it gets spent on schools, but often it would also be spent on healthcare or on even infrastructure. You know, I was at a fair trade sugar farm in Paraguay, and they actually spent the money, their fair trade funds, on an ambulance because they didn't have access to any hospitals nearby. So if there was a health emergency, they could use the ambulance. And so it's just interesting to see. What's great about it is it lets the community define their priorities as opposed to an outside one. I remember we had a company meeting once, and I showed my, you know, pictures of a trip to India. And one of our sales leaders said, "Wow, wouldn't it be great if we could build a playground for this community? They didn't have any playground." And it was a fun idea. But when I went to the council and said this was an idea, they're like, "That's just not what our economic concern is right now." They wanted, instead, they said, "We would much rather spend this money on eye care. We have both students and adults who." You know, need glasses. And so we helped fund a project to bring in eye care doctors to this community and not just the workers, but actually the village itself. And so thousands of people got either eyeglasses or diagnosed with, you know, for different eye conditions. And that helped raise the literacy, but it also helped improve the work because people could see what they were doing.
Yeah. Wow. That's super interesting. And very cool that it comes back to the community to make the decisions on what's best for them. That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
I saw recently that I think it was on LinkedIn, you had posted about, you know, like investors talking about looking for products that are 10% better than what's on the market. And I think you had said something like, you know, maybe we're not a fit because we're doing radical change. And right. I thought that was a really interesting perspective. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about, you know, kind of, you know, some, we've talked about some incremental change and I thought that was an interesting perspective.
Well, and I think it's especially important in the startup CPG community because, first of all, our food system is the bulk of it is just in the wrong direction. We're feeding people unhealthy food that doesn't help support life on the planet. And we're just doing more of that. And so all the trends for health indicators are in the wrong direction. I've mentioned this before that the U.S. is in the, you know, high 30s in terms of average life expectancy compared to, you know, countries everywhere from Japan, China, and Switzerland, which are doing so much better. And the U.S. should be doing so much better. So we've got to change the food system. And the incremental changes, those can happen by the big companies. And there are big companies making incremental changes. And that's it's mostly what you can expect from big companies because they're kind of stuck where they are. So they aren't going to go make really daring, bold changes. But it's us, the entrepreneurs, who should be making those daring, bold changes. And so, you know, when I was with Honest Tea, we had actually explored this space of a kid's snack. And we did look at, you know, could we make a fruit snack that maybe instead of 80 calories is 70 calories or maybe has a little more fiber, but those aren't material changes. And like I said, those are, you know, that there's, they're certainly better than what's out there. But now that I'm fully entrenched as a star, you know, challenger brand at Eat the Change, there's no point in Eat the Change offering a somewhat healthier fruit snack. We wanted to turn the whole category on its head. And that's why we brought out this first vegetable-based snack for kids to go in a lunchbox. And that's a fundamentally different offering. It's, you know, instead of a product with basically no nutritional value or marginal nutritional value, it's a full serving of carrots in a pouch. And so it's just clearly better if we can get the consumer to adopt it. But I feel like from the competitive standpoint, it's not compelling to a buyer. The world's too competitive. It's not compelling to a buyer to say, oh, I'll take this product that's, you know, marginally better, especially when a big company is already offering the existing product, has more funds, can offer it at a cheaper price. So it's not our job. And I go back to, you know, what is our job? What would an investor, quote unquote, hire you for? They wouldn't hire you to make a marginally better product. They'll hire you to change, you know, to turn an industry on its head and really grab new opportunities. That's what our charter is. That's what we should be focused on as entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. And so what's next at Eat the Change? As you know, what else is planned beyond this Earth Month?
Well, that's a lot for us. You know, Earth Month, like I said, it is our Super Bowl. So we're putting a ton of resources and energy into that. One fun surprise we did. At the end of last Earth Month, we got my co-founder Spike and my son Joan and I got in a canoe and we put together a sea shanty that was a really fun and engaging way to bring it to life. And so we're already working on the sequel to that. We are going to be filming it just in a few days and we'll look forward to sharing it with people. But you know, part of it is having fun with this. Like we can't be lecturing people all about the earth. I mean, the earth is in a very dire and serious place, but that is, let's at least make the message approachable and engaging and get people's attention. And hopefully we can get to them with the serious messages too, but we've got to find creative ways to bring it to life. And so that's what, we'll be sharing with people shortly.
Awesome. That sounds great. I think we need more sea shanties just in general and on the podcast, maybe. That sounds great.
That's right.
Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we wrap up?
No, I think, you know, it's such an important moment and we really hope this is a generational shift that we're marking here. So we always think about this as a movement, you know, this, yes, it's a brand and, but it's a movement and we really want all players from all sides to do everything they can, to take, whether it's their individual choices or their corporate choices, steps we can all take to move things in a better direction. And so, you know, for us, Eat the Change, it's a call to action, but it's also a call to empowerment and to accountability.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Seth. This has been super great to hear your thoughts and discuss super important topic. I'm excited to share this with your community and excited to have you back on the show here again soon.
All right, Jesse. Great to be with you.
Every time we eat a meal, we make a choice with Impact Real. The only way our Earth will heal is changing what we grow. Our planet's like a ship at sea, tossed and turned by climate. We must choose our foods more mindfully. We reap what we sow. Huh.
The biggest issue is food waste. One third is grown that we don't taste. It's tossed and lost in time and space. Don't let it overflow.
Our planet's like a ship at sea, tossed and turned by climate. We must choose our foods more mindfully. We reap what we sow. Huh.
A fifth of global gases comes from animals who could be chums. Plant-based saves enormous sums of water, land, and more.
Our planet's like a ship at sea, tossed and turned by climate. We must choose our foods more mindfully. We reap what we sow. Huh.
Pesticides and herbicides
kill weeds and bugs and more besides.
The organic seal helps you decide
which farmers you should know. Our planet's like a ship at sea. It can be saved by you and me. Eat the change you want to see. We reap what we sow. Huh.
Snack to the future.
Straight out the 301.
Getting nautical with it.
Thanks for joining us. Special thanks to Eat the Change for sharing their sea shanty featuring Seth Goldman, Spike Mendelson, and Javier Stark, and ocean-themed music courtesy of Aaron Kenny. This Startup CPG podcast is executive produced by me, Jesse Freitag. Theme music is by the Super Fantastics. We'd love to have you join our community of founders and experts. Get the invite at startupcpg.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening right now. It's the easiest way to help us grow our community. See you next time.